this is what Israel pushing for Iran, but is that America's problem? That's a question. I mean, maybe the answer is yes. Maybe the answer is, you know what? They were wrong about Iraq. They were wrong about Syria. They were wrong about Afghanistan. They were wrong about the Taliban. They were wrong about Libya. They were wrong about the Arab Spring. They were wrong about Yemen. They were wrong about the Arabian Peninsula. They were wrong about the 9/11 hijackers being Saudi Arabian. But hey, 10th time's a charm. This time, we're actually right. Yeah, you're going to have to earn our trust in this one.
I'm Frank Vaughn. It is March 1st, 2026. And did we ever end the month of February with a bang, literally. And yesterday was one of the hardest days I think I've experienced in terms of my following, in terms of the people I interact with on Twitter. Not so much on YouTube, it was mainly Twitter. People who have followed along for a long time, people who've been listening to me speak for 6 months, 12 months, listening to the geopolitical analysis, listening to my warnings. And when I didn't just jump on the celebratory bandwagon for the United States and Israel yesterday, and instead tried to provide some cold analysis as to the flaws of the casus belli against Iran, I've never been called retard more. I ate shit all day yesterday, and I will apologize ahead of time if I end up going to outgoing only for a while and I stop responding to comments, because I'll tell you, when people attack your kids, people in the Western independence movement that should know better, they attack your children without even meeting them. They attack you personally without even meeting them, because you don't just line up and celebrate a military campaign. That's not what we do here. I want to provide cold analysis of what is, and I believe this is a strategic mistake on the part of Trump, and I worry this is going to undermine him massively going into November, especially if this doesn't wrap up. If this thing keeps going, there's already U.S. servicemen dead, 3 dead, 5 injured, first day of operations. Drones are still falling from Iran onto U.S. military assets in the region. It is now a regional war, and I'm going to show you a couple things. But the first thing I want to tell you, and I hope you're still here, I hope you haven't tuned out already, I hope you're still here. This isn't about celebrating Khomeini. That's not what this is. This isn't celebrating the IRGC. This isn't taking sides. This isn't becoming anti-Trump or becoming anti-Iran. This is just an analysis. And I firmly believe that we need to be rooted in reason and analysis as we assess this, because I think we've opened the gates of entropy. Playing in the background is a video of how air traffic has already changed after, what are we at, maybe 36 hours of this operation being live. The air traffic in the region has completely cleared out, not just over Iran this time, but now it's over Iraq. It's much reduced over Syria. It's much reduced over Saudi Arabia. The entire region is being affected by this as missiles rain down on Doha, the UAE, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, in Riyadh. There was reports of explosions. We are experiencing a bit of a media blackout. We've seen pictures late last night, they came in from Tel Aviv showing 29 structures damaged, like a lot of cars blown up in the street and a lot of buildings damaged in the opening salvos. And we haven't even seen the advanced stuff that the Iranians have. Now, there are people out there who will tell you the might of America and the might of Israel will nullify and neutralize all of those assets. But I got to tell you, folks, that Iran is a much different beast from anything the Americans and Israel have had to face so far. There's little Afghanistan. Afghanistan is not little. Hopefully you can see my mouse. That's the terrain that no army, no modern Western army from the Soviets to the United States could ever master that terrain. And by the way, just as a corollary of what happened over the last 36 hours, Pakistan declared an open state of war with Afghanistan and began bombing Kabul and Kandahar. It's kind of flown under the radar, but this brings me to my first point. I'm told that an extremist Islamic regime cannot have nuclear weapons. That's a talking point. Well, there's Pakistan sitting right there. A sponsor of terror, an Islamic regime that has nuclear weapons and declared a war on Afghanistan yesterday. And that's really flown under the radar. Like, there might be some coordination there. There might be a shared plan. Iran is so much bigger with 90 million souls, mountainous terrain. The only person who ever mastered it was Alexander. Every other army that's ever tried has failed. It's a big place. It's a cohesive place. And this is another point that I need to talk about is this idea that there's going to be a spontaneous people-driven uprising to take out the IRGC and the mullahs. And this is the first botch that happened before the bombing campaign began. Now, I believe there is genuine desire to get out from under the mullahs. Don't get me wrong. But you better believe, given the history of the CIA, and MI6, and Mossad, and their public claims about their power and their networks all over the world, they openly claim that they're very powerful. They openly have said they're moving in Iran. One of the things I had to eat yesterday was abuse for suggesting that the intelligence community might be involved in funding and motivating those students to revolt. I mean, how absurd is it? This idea that it's all organic. It's absurd. It takes an organic seed and it, like fertilizer and water and good soil, it grows it. And you can agree with that or you can disagree with that. That's fine. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about what is. And there was an uprising, and America and Israel delayed. I thought it was going to start last weekend. I thought it was going to start months ago. It didn't. They delayed. And we don't know the full number. They say 35,000. Somebody started throwing around 40,000. Another person late in the day threw around 50,000. I mean, the number just keeps getting bigger. How many the IRGC killed? It's tragic. Don't get me wrong. But the IRGC was allowed time to basically kill those that the Americans and the Israelis were relying on to topple the regime from within. Bombs alone will not do it. We should have learned this through all of our war efforts. There's no plans to put troops on the ground in Iran, and it would take 500,000 at a minimum to even try and do anything there. The point being, the IRGC and the Iranian regime has clear-cut succession plans. They've been planning for this battle for a very long time. The regime's in control on the ground. And so far, admittedly, so last night was an interesting one. Late last night, most people didn't see it, but I made two separate mistakes. But I would almost say they're not my fault. Ultimately, the responsibility lies with me. I shared one video and then another video of crowds gathering in Iran. They were shared on Asian media. Grok verified them as real and linked me to other sources, mainstream sources that were covering them. And within 20 minutes, they were debunked as old footage. However, it is very clear, I'm not even going to bother with footage anymore, that the vast majority of public gatherings in Iran so far have been in mourning of Khomeini, have been in support of the IRGC. The IRGC is in control. There will not be a spontaneous overthrow of the regime from within, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't look like that to me. And this brings me to the other point, or another point I need to talk about, is the killing of Khomeini. It doesn't matter if you support him or like him. You have to be able to look at the situation and ask yourself what it means to them. One of the biggest mistakes that we make in warfare, Western nations, during the U.S. hegemonic moment or even while the U.S. was still rising, is to not understand things from the perspective of the people you're bombing. I'll take one example. Vietnam. The United States viewed Vietnam as an extension of the Cold War. If they didn't fight that war, China would come in and take over. The Russians would come in and take over and another country would fall, and that was the logic that was deployed by McNamara and subsequent U.S. presidents that he served. But the issue for the Vietnamese was fundamentally different. They had been fighting the Chinese for hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years. They'd been fighting the French and successfully fought them off. They would have fought the United States to the last man, and then when the U.S. left, they would have fought China because they were about Vietnam. They were not part of international communism. They were far closer to national socialism, which brings me to, again, that point about China and the potential of an invasion of Taiwan. If this thing keeps going on, If Iran keeps successfully, they've damaged, I think there's been 3 oil tanker incidents, could be more by now, in the Strait of Hormuz. The oil supply gets disrupted. Air traffic is disrupted. People can no longer trust their safety in the Emirates, in Dubai. There's people trapped there. They can't get out. And all the money in the world right now can't buy you a flight. If that continues, even moderately, look at the damage. This is another point. Look at what the Houthis were able to do in the Red Sea and for how long they were able to do it. And all the fancy and heavy ordnance in the world wasn't what stopped them. They did a lot of damage with very low-tech solutions. Now, Iran and their capacities, look at this terrain, folks. Look at it. This is their terrain with the IRGC in control. They have technology and cheap drones that can hit tanker traffic all day, and you can chase it around with every single plane in the Israeli and American Air Force. You're not going to eliminate it all. How do I know that? Because you couldn't do it in Afghanistan. You couldn't do it in Yemen. And Iran is much more powerful and ready to prolong this thing. You have to hope, for the world's sake, you have to hope that the leadership there comes to the table to talk to the United States. Trump is claiming that they've reached out and they want to talk about de-escalation. That'd probably be a good thing, because I'll tell you right now, the United States and Israel cannot win this war without serious commitment of hundreds of thousands of soldiers. And they didn't put any infrastructure in place to get them into Iran. And I don't even think, and I'm not even saying it would be successful. It would be a mess. And if the IRGC survives all of this, if the regime survives, and by the way, this is another thing. With every bomb that falls on Iran, you drive the population away from that spontaneous revolution. They are a united people. This is the Persian Empire. We've just forgotten modern times. You know, another issue I have is all the influencer class made me sick yesterday. Not every one of them. But they're acting like the regime is over. They're jumping up and down and celebrating and thinking it's just all done. One shot, one hit, done. And I'm worried that the people who are whispering in Trump's ears and finally convinced him to go ahead with this, because I genuinely believe Trump has been resisting this very thing. I mean, he campaigned on resisting this. And he's successfully avoided this several times over the years, this very war that he's in right now. And eventually, I think he capitulated. I think he was convinced that a few headshots, you bring the regime down, you do regime change, you basically return the favor to AIPAC and the people who funded your presidential campaign. I think there's a lot of pressure to do this on behalf of Israel. I don't know how you can deny that at this point. Israel's able to call meetings at the Pentagon. No other foreign nation can do that. They have a very powerful influence on this administration to the point where they have enough influence, they can convince the president to endanger his own presidency, because there's still the question of the legality of this entire operation without a formal declaration of war of Congress. And there's an argument back and forth. I don't want to get into it. The point I'm trying to make is the gates of entropy. There's resistance in the Republican Party, and there's definitely resistance in the Democrats. They'll resist anything. The midterms are coming. If this thing doesn't end, the other thing you need to remember, this is a deeply unpopular operation. The American people don't want this war. The independents, who are largely responsible for Trump getting reelected, don't want this war. I don't know if they'll vote Democrat, but they might stay home. They won't be enthusiastic. If this continues, American servicemen keep getting killed, chaos in the region, markets tank, because look, we got to face that too. The market open is coming. Futures trading will start in a matter of hours. Monday's coming. There's going to be a reckoning, I believe. And that reckoning is going to be determined by how much damage is ongoing throughout the rest of today in terms of Iran's capacity to keep hitting targets all across the region. It's now a big regional war. And I want to get this out of the way, because I see a lot of these idiots as well. And yeah, Zachary, He's an idiot. The dozens of girls, and this is what I wrote, the dozens of girls killed at school are elated that their deaths were worth it. So people have said, and I got attacked for even making this tweet. I got ratioed on the original tweet. Asian press, the Iranian government, Russian press, the majority of the press in the world, even if you talk to Grok, Grok will tell you that it might not be entirely determined, but there's very little evidence that supports the idea that the Iranians accidentally blew up their own school. There's a military base right there. That's for sure true. But if you look at the bomb damage and you do some comparisons and you do a little bit of thinking and you watch more than that one grainy cell phone video, you come to the conclusion that it was most likely, even Grok says, an American-Israeli bomb that fell on that school and killed all of these girls. At the end of the day, though, it doesn't matter whose bomb it was. I think it was an Israeli-American bomb. But the entire conflict and all the civilians that are going to die as a result of this, it began with the Israeli-American bombardment. And it's, you don't have to like Khomeini. You don't have to like the Ayatollah. You don't have to be in love with Iran to recognize that this is an attack on them. Another talking point that we got to dispense with, because I've mentioned the fact that the Ayatollah issued a fatwa against nuclear weapons. The Ayatollah, believe it or not, for all of the human rights abuses, was moderate in spite of the verbal musings, the insults, calling the West the great Satan. When it came to nukes and when it came to Iranian expansionism, he's a moderate. He had formally issued a fatwa against nuclear weapons. And people will say, well, the Muslims, they're allowed to lie. They can lie to all of the non-Muslims. That's true. The Talmud gives Judaic practitioners, I hesitate to use the word Jews because there's so many Jews who are not Talmudic Jews. Talmudic Jews have the ability to lie to all of the non-Jews as well. It's the same thing, but nobody wants to talk about that side of it. But that's not even the flaw in the logic. The flaw in the logic is a fatwa is directed at the Shiites. He would be lying to the Shiites, not just the non-Muslims. So it takes the talking point and it throws it away. They've killed this guy. They've killed a bunch of people around him. And so far, the replacements look to be of the same mind, that they don't want nuclear weapons. There's this idea people keep saying, Iran can't have nuclear weapons. I don't know how much more they could renounce it. They wanted to maintain the ability of enrichment. If you want to argue whether they should or they shouldn't, we can argue that. But they renounced nuclear weapons, and they clearly don't have them today. So as reformers come in and bombing campaigns keep targeting top leadership, eventually you're going to kill all the reformers, and you're going to be left with hardliners. Hardliners, with every single bomb, who get more powerful in the eyes of the people that they rule over. Again, the IRGC is still in control. And now let's talk about the killing of Khomeini, I keep pronouncing it wrong. This guy, whether you love him or not, it's irrelevant. We're trying to figure out what is. This guy is an 80-odd-year-old grandfatherly patriarch for somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 million Muslims in Iran and around the world. Now, there's far more Shiites than 100 million, and the remainder of those Shiites also look to him, maybe not to celebrate him, maybe not as fundamentally as the 100 million I'm talking about. You just martyred this guy. So much so that you have, and I don't know if you guys have seen this yet, I don't know if Western media is even covering the fact that the American embassy in Pakistan is under assault by Pakistani Muslims. They have a very large Shiite population, and they've just gone to war with Afghanistan. I saw pictures of Molotov cocktails and windows burning, and I think 9 people are dead and 50 injured, and it's basically a pitched battle. You have the exact same scene in Baghdad. The government doesn't appear to have any control, and the government itself is anti-American for $3 trillion. Remember, it was Trump who talked about this. It was Trump who campaigned. $3 trillion, all these lives lost. Remember, he got booed at all those debates back in 2016? $3 trillion, all the lives lost, and for what? Didn't even get anything out of it. And worse, you turned a natural enemy of Iran into a natural ally. We've seen video and news coverage last week of Iraqis signing up to volunteer to go and protect Iran. And I think this trend only continues. This is a mess. And for those of you who are, I think I'm anti-Trump, there's so many good ideas. It doesn't nullify anything I've said. Fixing illegal immigration, passing the SAVE Act, fixing the voting system ahead of the election, Fortress North America, the idea of concentrating on this hemisphere. Remember, it's like people forget. They campaigned against Middle Eastern wars. I could show you clip after clip of Trump campaigning against this very thing. He said very clearly, Iran can never have a nuclear weapon. And well, they don't. Pakistan does. Israel does. But they don't. And he talked about getting out of the Middle Eastern wars. We're not doing regime change anymore. Something's fundamentally shifted. They managed to prevail upon him the idea that this thing would be over quick. I hope I'm wrong. I highly doubt it. I think the mess is just getting ramped up. The IRGC has not imploded. The government has not fallen. And all of the people you were relying on to overthrow the government got killed. Well, you dilly-dallied. But to finish up with Mr. Tisdale, hail the victorious dead. This is a guy who clearly doesn't have kids. Dancing on the graves of these children. Whether it was an Israeli or an American bomb or it was an Iranian misfired missile, there's two other schools that have been bombed. One of the things that really turned me, because people keep asking, what happened to you? You used to be such a good Zionist. I was never a good Zionist. I was never a Zionist. I look at things as they are. And when I watched Israel level the Gaza Strip, killing untold tens of thousands of minors and children in the process, that I don't have a hard enough heart to just shrug my shoulders at the mass death of children. It really bothers me. I've got two children that I love enormously, and then their friends who I have to look at every time they play together. And I have to face my heart, and I have to look into my soul, and I can't shrug that off. And all this does is harden the hearts of the people that you're trying to convince you're doing a favor to. This just turns them against us, against the cause, the Western cause. To summarize some other points quickly for you, the Elbows Up crowd is all of a sudden, the official leadership of the Elbows Up crowd, is celebrating the bold leadership of the Trump administration, fully supporting this operation. That should be a red flag. It seems to be flying under the radar. Polyev, of course, has followed along. That's what he does. He follows along pretty much with whatever Carney does, and he just feeds Carney's script into chat. And a few other points we got to touch on, I'm trying to keep this one short, is that the Elbows Up crowd, or at least the leadership of the Elbows Up crowd, is celebrating Trump's bold leadership on this. And of course, Polyev followed along with his own celebratory remarks about the end of the regime, and all of a sudden we forgot about the necessity of decrying every single thing that Trump does. I'm still wondering, and as I wonder this, I'm starting to wonder if it is indeed going to end up benefiting people. That if there is a high degree of coordination between Carney and Trump, if there's not something more sinister behind it. But we have forgotten this battle. The other thing is, we've got Naftali Bennett, who is a former Israeli prime minister, and sometimes he's a good trial balloon or thermometer of Israeli political thought. There's something else I've been telling you about for a long time. I've been telling you about Turkey. I'm telling you about how Turkey should have never been allowed in NATO, that they are the soft underbelly, that they play all sides. Very appropriate for their position on the map. I don't have the map up. At the center of the world. They are not European. They're not Russian lapdogs. Turkey sees itself, and this is important. You have to understand how Persia and Iran sees itself. You have to understand how Turkey sees itself. You have to understand how Israel sees itself. You have to understand how the neocons view themselves. You have to understand not your position, not your beliefs. You have to understand what other people think, because that's what we're doing. We're all competing in the same space called Earth with different ideas and different points of view. And not understanding the other side is exactly how we end up in disaster. To understand Turkey and to understand Erdogan, they're about their own business. And we have Naftali Bennett, the former Israeli prime minister, saying, Turkey is the new Iran. This does not stop with the Ayatollahs, because the next strategic adversary, this is really important, is Turkey, member of NATO, competing with Israel directly for the remnants of Syria. You better believe that Jolani's only there as a placeholder. He's there as a buffer between these competing interests. Once again, the Americans turned their backs on the Kurds. Shamefully, the Kurdish people have been getting screwed by everybody. It almost brings a tear to my eye, man. Kurdish history is just, it's a story of human tragedy and perseverance, almost akin to the Armenians. Turkey is the new Iran. So in the conflict, coming strategic conflict, maybe it won't be kinetic, strategic conflict with Iran, it's going to require a different approach strategic conflict with Turkey. It's going to require a different approach from that of Iran. Turkey is very powerful. It's a member of NATO. And I haven't fully fleshed out this thought experiment yet. I just see that this is coming, and I see that Turkey is not anybody's friend. They're certainly not a friend to the West. Now that America is committed to this battle in Iran, now that everybody that's been whispering in Trump's ears has finally got him to act, you're not going to like this. I'm probably going to take more flack today. I'm probably going to get called retard, maybe more today than I'll get called retard than I got called yesterday. Yesterday was a hard day, man. I've never taken more flack from people who have been following me for 6 months or longer. It's like, how did you people get here? How did you get to this place after consuming so much of my content that you were shocked and surprised about how I approached yesterday? It's like they're not listening to anything I've got to say. It's not just that Trump is potentially undermined by this heading into the November elections. It's that Trump becomes expendable to the people who have been whispering in his ear. Now that America is committed and in, they're not going to be get out, and they're not going to be able to get out unless the Iranians voluntarily end this thing. Maybe they will. But the fact is, for the second time, in the middle of negotiations, the decision was made to strike. We had just maybe 56 hours ago, we had articles talking about the progress that was made in Oman. Repeatedly, media reports that Iran is totally renouncing nuclear, that they were willing to accept that they couldn't enrich to 60. They just wanted a civilian nuclear weapon program, and everybody said they were making progress, and then the bombs started falling. It's the second time that's happened. It's the second time that it's actually happened more than that in different theaters, second time for Iranian theaters, that the Americans have sent signals to the world, and the Israelis have sent signals to the world that they weren't going to do anything. And I don't know why you would believe that. When you assemble an armada, when you assemble a military force like they have, they use it every single time. It's not about saber rattling. You have to pull the saber out and you got to strike. I got a bit of a tickle in my throat today, so forgive me for drinking. There's people out there who get triggered every time I drink something. It's ridiculous. At any rate, and this is an unpopular thought, now that America's committed, Trump is more expendable. This is the last target that his approach was necessarily needed for. And now he's a prisoner of events as well. His power has been reduced by this action. If it ends quick, you can take all that off the table. If it prolongs and the war continues the way that I think it will, because the RGC doesn't, they're in control. If it continues, markets are disrupted, the wheels come off the stock market bus, American casualties keep climbing, bases get hit, Doha keeps getting hit, Dubai keeps getting hit, the war expands, nobody has a plan for going into Iran to stop them from doing this, there's not enough planes in the sky to constantly bomb. If there's a spontaneous outbreak of revolution in Iran and the IRGC is still in control, bombs aren't going to put the repression down. Sure, you can kill some Iranian soldiers. You can keep dropping bombs all day. But there ain't enough ordnance. Again, with the thin inventories, people don't like hearing about that either. There's only so many Tomahawks. Tomahawks are old tech. And even when they were new tech, they were getting shot down successfully. Of course, there were media blackouts about that. And there's going to be media blackouts now as to how much U.S. and Israeli power is getting thwarted by defenses. We're not going to know. But Tomahawks have a fail rate, and there's only so many of them. There's only so much ordnance. There's only so many JDAMs. There's only so many THAADs and anti-missile protection. The Iranians have demonstrated in the 12-day war that they're willing to hold back their best stuff to deplete the inventory of Iron Dome munitions and counter-ballistics. And if they're doing that again, and they have no intention of stopping this thing, and indeed they keep striking back, eventually the casualties... I mean, I'm surprised how many got through to Israel and Tel Aviv. And I'm amazed how much information we were actually able to get, considering the Israeli government will arrest and throw you in jail for sharing social media imagery of even just residential areas getting hit. There's this fog of war. It ain't as easy. It's not a cakewalk. If it continues, Trump's got problems in November. Trump's got problems with, if he could just get bogged down in impeachment, he could be torn down. His powers could be limited by Congress that comes together. As damage increases, people will turn on him. Half the Republican Party, a lot of the people around him that he glad hands with, what's the State of the Union, man? The best people in the administration, the Tulsi Gabbards, the RFKs. From a certain perspective, even the Marco Rubios, they all looked so grim at the State of the Union. Did you see their faces? But a lot of the people that were glad handing and smiling the biggest and applauding the loudest, they hate him and they will turn on him when an opportunity presents itself. I worry that he has now painted himself into a corner, and there's a lot of good ideas domestically that will disappear off the radar. So, you know, am I anti-Trump? Am I pro-Iran? Has nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it at all. A good friend doesn't tell you you look like you're in the best shape of your life when you're rocking a gut. They don't lie to you. If you're about to make a stupid decision, a good friend will tell you the decision is stupid and advise against it and give you the liberty of making a bad decision all at the same time. The last thing anyone needs are yes men. And I'm not a yes man. I care about some of the ideas that the Trump administration is trying to implement. I care about how they could influence my country and lead to prosperity for all of us. And I care that those ideas might be derailed in a war that does not at all serve American interests. It does not serve American interests, and there's no way you can convince me that it does. It serves Israeli interests. And if you're still here, I'm Frank Vaughn. I don't want to get into what I lost. If you like the work, please consider supporting it via the website. I'll see you in the next one.